It's the Spike Feed Holiday Special. With special guests, Megan Fox and Rod Blagojevich. Featuring the Suntail Hawk. With a special performance from Katy Perry and the Spike Feed Chamber Orchestra. Now, here are your hosts, Dustin Gore, Cameron McCoy, and Curtis Naur.
Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? It's a holiday special. I am one of your hosts. Curtis is my name. On the line with me is my good buddy Dustin. Dustin, how are you, sir?
Not too bad. Trying to stay warm.
Yeah, you're kind of bundled up for this episode. Yeah. I want the listeners to picture that. That's right. You in this kind of like very thick looking sweater. We'll call it that, right?
It's nice. It's warm.
Meanwhile, Cameron is in a much more trendy North Face Gore-Tex looking thing.
right.
With it slightly unzipped as to show off his, machismo or whatever that
is. His lack of chest hair.
Yeah. So Cameron is our producing genius and MTG yellow belt. Cameron, how are you, sir?
Feeling merry, dude. How about you?
I'm also feeling quite jovial, despite the fact that my football team lost today. So, hey, life is full of little disappointments. But we've got a great show lined up for you guys. We're going to start this show out like we do every week, talking about kind of what we've done. Dustin's just been huddled in a corner, staying warm.
That's right. It's hard to live on the streets.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is indeed. The rough life of a Magic financier. So, you're going to grade some of my trades later on, Dustin, but Cameron, I first want to throw it to you. How's life been going in Des Moines?
Not too bad. So this week, I got to play a little Modern and suited up a Jeskai Delver deck. Now, I'm kind of going back to the Delver list. There was a fifth place win in one of the Star City events, and the deck kind of got me interested. It's pretty much blue-red Delver, splashing white for Geist of St. Traft, Lightning, Helix, and Path to Exile. And then some stuff in the sideboard just to kind of have some additional utility. It did really, really well with this deck. Went 3-1 this week. Not a lot interesting to say. I keep on playing like the same opponents. I keep on playing a pod opponent. I keep on playing a Splinter Twin opponent and, another blue-red Delver. So I'm kind of getting like the sense of like, here are some decks that I know I'm going to come up against in Omaha. And it's really, really good practice because these guys are also, well-practiced in their decks. And that's all I have to say. It's an interesting deck. It's a little bit slow compared to the blue-red Delver builds, especially the ones that are now running like four Thought Scour and like just crazy graveyard stuff just to, power up your treasure cruise. But I've been having a good time with Modern. I'm looking forward to Omaha. I keep on just worrying more and more and more about that as far as just finding like that perfect deck that I want to play with.
So we're official, right? You and I are going to be there. We should mention that.
Yes, we are official. We will be there. And I cannot wait. This will be my first GP. And I don't even know what to expect. I mean, I did not sign up, Dustin, for the VIP pass. And I'm kind of questioning that because I really wanted that water,
Right. You want people to bring you water between rounds, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would be really nice. It seems like it's worth like an extra $100.
Right. Because I mean,
what about a phone charging station? What about that?
Yeah. So that I cannot use my phone during play because you can't have those out on the table. So it makes perfect sense, right? Yeah.
Right.
Let's see. So then I also played on Friday night this week. I played the Jeskai Tokens deck that's kind of making the rounds and we've been talking about quite a bit. My list looks practically identical to like Chris Van Meter's list or pretty much anybody else's on the Star City Games circuit, except I don't have Chandra's and I can't find Chandra's right now. And so I'm running two Purphoros instead. and actually,
hey, Cameron, you know I can get you Chandra's, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know you can.
I think he asked for Chandra's.
Oh, Chandra's. Chandra's. I'm sorry.
That's why I don't
Iowa
have them.
Coming out. Yeah, it actually has like a little short A on it. Like,
right.
Yeah, pronunciation guide on it. So I really, really, really like this deck. And I'm still just having like this, like, I don't know what, some sort of like crisis with cons. It's a really good set. I really like it, but it's just not scratching the itch the way that, oddly enough, like a blue-white control deck from last year was scratching the itch for me. It's weird because like my matchups seem to be more varied, but I just don't feel like I'm enjoying the game as much or enjoying the meta as much. And this, I don't want to like say that I'm a hater on cons because that's not it. It seems like it's missing something and I can't put my finger on what that is.
I think the big thing with cons that we're seeing is cons changes just a lot of things in standard to where there's so many decks and so many different types of play that's available, right? And it doesn't just get us into that mindset of I'm going into this, this is powerful, I want to win, because it's just, again, it's so varied, you never know exactly what's going to happen or what's going to go on, and it feels a lot more like at-home tabletop Magic than it is tournament play.
Yeah, maybe. Curtis, disagree. I know you probably do completely.
Oh, my God. Dude, last standard season, Ravnica Theros was awful. Awful. There were four decks. There were four.
I know.
Right.
I know.
I mean, not four top tier decks. There were four decks. End of story. It was the worst. And they were all just kind of the same-ish. Colors didn't have identity. What are we doing with a blue mid-range beatdown deck? Oh, wow. This is so fun. Right?
Hey, that deck owned Cameron multiple times.
It did.
No.
Yeah.
Even if I'm not playing it, dude.
That's fun.
I don't have
You're
my
like
white whale. That's what it is.
Relationship with Mono Blue. You just
it's
want
so
it
true.
Back? Like, what is wrong with you?
No, it's not that I want that back. I just feel like I just want something more. And I am kind of, it's like that time of year. I think it probably happens end of December, coming into January, where I think I'm ready for Standard to kind of get something new in it or some new cards. I don't know. I that's the thing. I really like it. It just hasn't been grabbing hold of me the way that
all
I want
Cameron
to.
Wants for Christmas is some S&M Magic. That's what it is.
Okay.
Makes sense, right?
50 Shades of Grey Merchant is what you're saying.
Exactly. See, you got this.
So, honestly, Cameron, I just couldn't disagree more. So, my experience this week, I have a couple things going on. Number one, I played just standard FNM, and I kind of had one of those weird things where, you know, I played in that standard PTQ that was really small the previous week. I played blue-black control, a deck that I feel like I really have down. And it's kind of fallen out of favor, and I got pretty crushed in my matchups. And I thought, man, maybe this time for the time for this deck is kind of through. Maybe I just need to move on. And you know, things swung the other way. I went to FNM. I played against Siege Rhino decks, two of my four matches, and you know, I ended up splitting top four at the FNM. But just in an effort to shake things up a little bit, I am building the Jeskai Tokens deck. I used my winnings on Friday to buy three Rabble Masters, so I'm pretty much, you know, headed in that direction. But, you know, it's kind of weird. There's so many of these cards in that deck that are commons and uncommons that I do and don't have. It is... We haven't really talked about this, but I kind of have a thing. I wouldn't say that I foil out my decks. Dustin, how would you describe my tendencies? I'm very particular about artwork. Is that a good way of saying it?
I wouldn't say the artwork. You're just particular about having the old school, you know?
Yeah.
If something comes out and it's a reprint, you want the original artwork. You like the old frames. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you hate the silvering of new artifacts. You're a purist. That's what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I want my deck to be aesthetically pleasing. I only play Zendikar lands. I want all the artwork to match. And because I'm piecing this together, and I've made this goal for myself to not purchase any of the cards, either to win them or to trade into them, It is the most aesthetically displeasing deck I've ever put together. Like, I have two of the new promo Stoke the Flames and two of the old ones. I'm split down the middle on Raise the Alarms. I mean, it is just an ugly, ugly, ugly deck. And it's really difficult for me to deal with on that level. But I'm trying to tell myself, you cannot purchase any of these cards, right? I have one foil Jeskai Ascendancy and no other Jeskai Ascendancy. So I'm going out and getting, you know, I'll have one foil and the rest will be non-foil. Man, that'll bother me. It'll just bother me, right?
Mm-hmm. But you're saving money.
I am saving money, which makes... I mean, I don't know. I lose style points. None of the cards are foreign in it. It's just rough, man.
Right.
You know, obviously that makes the missus happy when I'm not spending exorbitant amounts of money on cards, but I just would prefer to be able to, you know, get things that match and look right. However, Dustin, I've been doing some trading. I want you to grade these trades. You ready?
Right.
I came prepared and I wrote them down. They're on my handy dandy note card here.
All right.
All right. You ready? So... this one was really strange, and I didn't know how far Nykthos has fallen, by the way, in terms of value. So I traded a Nykthos, plain English, for the release promo Villainous Wealth foil, the one that's got the date on it.
Okay.
And a Jeskai Charm is the toss-in. So according to Star City, that's roughly value equal. They were like a quarter off. But what do you think of the trading for these promos?
The thing with the promos is they were pretty thin in release, so that's never a bad thing. They do seem kind of hard to find for people trying to get the full 40. Also being Villainous Wealth, I think they're still somewhere down the road that card could be more broken. You know, it's not a bad thing to get into, especially as it's cheap. So good trade. I don't think it's bad, but in the long run, land is land. Nykthos will probably end up being the one worth more.
Okay. So unless Villainous Wealth or that promo becomes kind of like Villainous Wealth becomes an EDH thing, which is very possible.
Right. Or the promos, you know, you get enough collectors looking for that promo. But I think that it's a crapshoot, you know. You're going to sit on it for a while, longer than you would a Nykthos.
Okay. All right, so here's one I made last week, and I couldn't remember it, but I ended up going back and looking through my binder to see what was missing.
Right.
So I traded a Modern Masters Vidalkin Shackles for an M14 Mutavault and a Conspiracy Stifle. Value equivalent again.
Right. I like that trade. I think that is a very solid trade. Mutavaults are used multiple formats. It's a four of in decks, hands down. Getting some stifles in there is just, that's like gravy, man.
Okay.
Can we just talk really quick about like how Dustin seems to be losing his edge, not on like the trading front, but just on the insult front when it comes to, I don't know. He's like that Simon guy from American Idol, you know, he's like always just throwing out the insults, and I'm kind of frightened, Dustin, at how kind of positive you are on this.
Well, here's one for him to get negative about. You ready?
Okay. All right.
All right, so as you know, I'm trying to put together Jeskai tokens, and the Pain Lands.
Tell me you didn't trade it in for token cards. That would be...
No.
Okay.
Which, by the way, that's an unintentional side effect. Like, I have none of these goblin tokens, and I'm playing with Rabble Masters. It's the worst.
Right.
I got to, like, go get some goblin tokens. But anyway, I traded for a M15 Battlefield Forge, okay? Four Delver of Secrets... two Vault Scourges and two signed English Young Pyromancers.
Okay, hang on. What did you get? Is this all stuff you traded?
I got the Battlefield Forge. I traded four English Delvers, two Vault Scourges, and two signed young pyromancers signed by, was that Cynthia Shepherd?
I think so. And you got a single Battlefield Forge.
Just single one. Battlefield Forge.
From M15. Right. Not even the original set.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That one, yeah, you were definitely smoking crack on that one, just straight up. There's no other way to put it, right?
You know, I would actually agree with you on that. I'm going to agree with Dustin on this. That's a bad trade, dude.
It seems like a really bad trade in the long run. Yes, having the Battlefield Forge is going to help you in Standard. I hope you continuously split top four and make money off of it to come up for that loss. It just...
over several days. Yeah.
Over several times, right. It just... You gave away some really good stuff. It's just... I don't know, man. I don't think I could have been behind that. Once the Painlands rotate back out of Standard, you know they're going to go back to the nothingness they are.
Okay, so we can agree, though, that the Vault Scourges were just nothing, right? That's like 50 cents worth of this trade. The value is all in the young Pyromancers and the Delvers, right?
Well, Vault Scourge is still highly played. It's not worth much, but it is highly played, right?
Right.
That being said, give it, you know, another year, they could be a dollar instead of 50 cents, right? Where your Battlefield Forge is going to be $3-4 at most.
Dude, the Painlands have been... I'm not trying to be punny here, but they've just been a huge pain in the butt in terms of getting your hands on them. Mm-hmm. Like, especially Battlefield Forges and Shivan Reefs. Like, anytime you point to one in somebody's binder or whatever, like, it's easier to get into fetch lands.
Or which temples, is crazy right. to me. I get that. And it's really odd being as how many printings there's been of the pain lands. It's like they've got to be somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just think a lot of those players weren't playing then. And, you know, kind of frustratingly, I have this box of, like, cards I have from way back in the day. And I don't have any of the off-color Painlands. I just have on-color ones, or allied Painlands from Ice Age, right?
That's one of the most annoying things, too, is when you get half of a thing and not the other half. Because it's like, dude, mm-hmm. if you need Sulphur Springs, they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just,
okay, I knew you were going to come down harshly on me for that one.
All
right, guys, we've got a lot of... kind of year-end things to talk about. So let's get out of this segment, come back, and chat that stuff up. Okay, guys, so what we decided to do is just kind of divide our year in review into categories this year and kind of just have an at-large discussion about what we think. So let's just lead it off with some positivity, our trademark positivity that we're known for. Best set. So, Cameron, I'll kick it to you first because you were just totally being a huge crybaby about cons earlier in the show. So, what's your favorite set?
My favorite set, honestly, is M15. And this is solely because we went to Star City, Kansas City, and we both drafted. And I know you had a blast drafting. Myself, I had... more fun drafting that than I have pretty much anything else. I thought it was probably one of the... we've talked about this several times on the show. One of the best sets to draft. It just had, like, really good synergy. I mean, it didn't really even matter what colors you were choosing. You could always just have a lot of fun playing Limited with M15. As far as like how M15 will impact the future of Legacy, Modern, or even Standard, we're not seeing a lot. I mean, yeah, there's some like M15 things that just seem to be kind of like ghosts where you can't find them and you need them for your Standard decks. But overall, I would say the best set was M15.
All right, Dustin, what do you think, man?
All right, I'm ready to get beat up on this one. I am going to go with Born of the Gods. I am. I have reasons. I have reasons. All right? And these are the reasons. Okay? So, Born of the Gods had some cards in it that was just really big and were defining Standard for a while, right? So, we got Xenagos, the God version, right? His deck was just stomping things left and right. I mean, he was a moneymaker himself, right?
That's true.
Corsair Crucifix came out of that set. That's seen tons of play in lots of decks. Brimaz is out of that set. He was a powerhouse. Hero of Erois, which is being used right now, and he'd been used a little bit before. We also got uncommons like Bile Blight, Drown in Sorrow, and Searing Blood. Overall, the set was just really good and brought a lot to new decks, and it was, you know, what was winning Standard.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how to respond to that. I mean, Courser is obviously, I think it's probably the best, maybe the most important card from Theros block. I don't know, you might disagree with that, but I mean, whenever I look back on Theros block, that's probably going to be the card that pops in my brain is Courser or Sylvan Caryatid. But obviously Theros doesn't, you know, count towards this. I didn't like Born of the Gods. I hated Journey into Nyx.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But hey, you're entitled to your opinion, Dustin. So my favorite set was, I'm going to back up Cameron here. So I should say, I really like Cons a lot, and I think I like it a lot more than both of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, so don't get me wrong. Like I said before, Cons is a good set. It's just, to me, not as defining, because there's so many cards that are being played and flip-flopped back and forth that nothing just really stands out and just owns you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say Cons is had a bigger... I mean, obviously, it's had a huge impact on Standard, but when I think of the impact of Cons, I'm going to think of what it's done to Legacy and Modern, which has been...
Absolutely.
I mean, geez, like, right. Huge. I mean, you can't understate the impact of Treasure Cruise on those formats, but that set aside, while I really like Cons, M15 is the one that I didn't expect to like.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And there's a certain charm to that. You know, I was thinking about this... you know, with regards to, here comes the obscure Curtis reference and metaphor, analogy, whatever you want me to call it, with Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow. So today,
wow, okay,
I was watching Amazing Sky movie, Captain on Netflix.
It's good stuff.
And that's a great movie. It's got like 2 out of 5 stars on Netflix.
It's good.
Like, who are these people, by the way? Yeah, like, get a clue. It's a pulpy thing, right? But whatever. The point is, that's a movie that I love because when I sat down to it, I was not expecting anything. And it was great. It was great. And so that's exactly what M15 was for me. I was not really that excited by M13 or M14. Played the limited format, and I loved it. And I thought I think there's a lot of constructed touches of just genius in it. The Painlands, Urborg. I remember when Urborg was spoiled, Dustin called me, and I thought, this is the most absurd, dumb thing ever. But now that I see how it's played out in Standard with Urborg, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. I just really like the set a lot, and it's definitely one that I want to buy a box and like have us draft sometime.
Yeah.
So I think it was a limited home run, and it's a great addition to Constructed. A bunch of those cards are making a huge impact that we never saw coming in the way that they did, like Goblin Rabble Master. Whereas Cons, I think we expected going in that this was going to be a huge deal, and it was. I would put it as kind of like the Avengers. It was a big budget movie, and it was what you thought it was.
Right.
I'm not even going to go down this whole talk about Guardians of the Galaxy with you guys because you guys are frankly ridiculous when it comes to talking about that movie. So,
I said the movie was good.
It's fine.
No, you were, quote, I don't see the big deal. No, because we always get good superhero movies in the past, Dustin, all the time. We should totally take it for granted.
And I will.
Yeah, and we will. All right, so we've got 3 categories for individual cards. We'll start with here. Card that had the most impact. And I feel like we might have alluded to these. I'll start with you, Dustin. What was the card that you thought had the most impact from the last year?
You know, I'm like breaking this because I'm not doing this right. There was 3 cards to me that really, you know, stood out. Sorry, it's the way it goes.
Cheater.
Jeskai Ascendancy being one of them, right?
Okay.
It's hitting all 3 formats. That's impact right there. Treasure.
I feel like he should stop
earlier.
Right here.
I'm moving on.
I feel like he should stop. He's got a great point, and he should stop.
I'm moving. Treasure Cruise, like you said, it's the way it goes. And the last one would be Nissa World Waker, because in the realm of Planeswalkers, she was just, you know, crazy good, and she's going to see a long life and obviously EDH and stuff like that. So
yeah.
All right, Cameron, what do you think, man?
Well, it's obvious. I mean, we've talked about it for the past, like, 2 months. It's Treasure Cruise. The card, I think we kind of underplayed it at first. You know, we looked at it as like, oh, yeah, they'll probably see some play. Maybe some people will experiment with it. But within, like, 2 weeks of Cons being released, I mean, it completely transformed Legacy and Modern. I don't think, I mean, I've only been playing really competitively for 1 year, but I mean, how often do you get a card that, I mean, is obviously this broken or this good? You know, I mean, Deathrite Shaman comes to mind as like maybe one. Stoneforge Mystic is another. But this is like one of those cards of just like, I think everybody who started to experiment with it, especially within like a blue-red Delver shell or whatever, was like, yes, this is obviously a great card. And I mean, I'm going to use it and abuse it as quickly as possible. So
just to back up what you were saying, and this is the card that I have the most egg on my face about ever, mm-hmm. ever. We didn't talk about it on this show, but I was on Tap and Sack, and I was like, this is just too much mana. It's too much mana. There's no way. By the way, shout out to our guys, Houston and John, over in Tap mm-hmm. and Sack. But, yeah, I will say this. So it is feasible that Treasure Cruise gets banned in Modern and Dig Through Time stays, and long-term Dig Through Time has more impact mm-hmm. on the format. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. But this happens to Modern, it seems like, in Legacy, you know, once every, you know, block or two, we have Deathrite Shaman. And, you know, Snapcaster, when it hit, was a much bigger deal in Legacy than it is now.
Right.
Liliana is a very big deal in Legacy. So, you know, obviously Deathrite Shaman is the one that's kind of the biggest parallel that's just automatically slotted into all these decks and made this just giant impact on the format. And Deathrite Shaman's no longer in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty likely for
it's telling
Treasure Cruise as well. But I mean, Jeskai Ascendancy is we might be seeing the beginnings of that as well. But I think Treasure Cruise is our leading candidate for most impact card, or our winner, I should say that. All right, so most disappointing card. Can I lead this one off?
Yes,
do
please.
It, man.
We didn't even like talk about the parameters of most disappointing. I think you guys are going to mention cards that are not good in actual constructive play. I'm going to mention a card that is good that I hate. And it is by far the biggest mistake WotC's made in the last year. And that is our friend Eidolon of the Great Revel. What on earth are you guys thinking? What was the design philosophy? You know what's not like what's fun is making people burn themselves when they play a spell. You guys got rid of mana burn, you got rid of land destruction, you got rid of all these effects that stop people from casting spells, and then you print this card. Like, what in the world? It is the least fun card to play against in I don't know how long.
Curtis, do you want to know why that card is not disappointing?
Because it upsets me.
Because it's worth money.
Because it's red.
Because you can bank on it. You can sell it. That's why it's not disappointing.
Let me clarify this, because I have no problem with good red cards. Monastery Swift Spear is a great red card and well made. Okay? But any card like that you like have to burn yourself to play, it's psychotic. And the quote downside, I mean, it just basically, here's how it actually plays out in Modern and Legacy, is all the sideboard cards that you bring in against mono red stop working. Cool. That's a lot of fun. So anyway, very disappointed in that card. Bad WotC. Very bad indeed. Cameron, what's your most disappointing card?
Well, you know, actually, oddly enough, I 100% agree with you on Eidolon. I think it was just kind of like the really, really, really card.
I think you guys are definitely allowed to be wrong every now and then.
Well, sure, but I mean I just played
against
that. How
many times
have
you played against this card, Dustin?
I don't play against that card, you know. Yeah. like I said, this is all financial for me, and it is yeah. Gravy, man.
I hate when like I Lightning Helix an Eidolon and then somebody bolts their Eidolon just to stick it to me that I can't gain life. Like that from a burn player. Curtis, I'm totally there with you with this. I mean, like, for me, one of the most disappointing, and it's a heartbreaker, and I mean, you know, part of me knew that it wasn't going to be a good card, but I wanted Villainous Wealth to be a great card. And I was so disappointed. And maybe we'll find a place, you know, that isn't like this, you know, pet Brewers deck sort of card. But yeah, like that's the one that I just saw and I wanted to be so good, and it is what it is.
There's still time. There's still time.
There is.
Dustin, what about you, man? What's the most disappointing card?
So I'm going to go with Painseer. You know, the reason for this is there was hopes out there, right? The money was supposed to be coming in, never happened. It's not a horrible card. As a bear, you know, in a deck that in standard does what it's supposed to do, whatever. It's not, you know, horrible, but it just never went the distance like everybody had hoped.
Dude, I think if we had a category of the card that Curtis was the most right about, it would be Painseer.
We don't have that category.
We definitely don't have that category.
Can I just put one second card? Savage Punch. Just because I saw that card, and it's a guy punching a bear.
It
needed to be better than target creature you control fights whatever, like a creature you don't control, right? It needed to be better than that.
You cannot build a deck based on artwork, okay?
Just telling you, I was really disappointed with that, but anyway.
All right.
My most disappointing moment of this year is Cameron.
Well, we haven't gotten to that. But pet cards.
All right.
My pet card, I'm just going to lead off right away, Frostlinks. Slam dunk. That is what I'm talking about. Take that tempo and like it. You know what I'm saying? Love it. Dustin, what about you, man?
They reprinted Black Cat. I got more foils to collect. It's all that matters. It's the best card in all of M15 because of the artwork, and it's not a guy punching a bear. Take that.
All right, Cameron. Was Bear Punch your pet card?
It was, yeah. Savage Punch was like... it set the tone, or what I expected the tone to be for cons. You know, just like a punch to the face, and it's just not any face, it's a bear face.
So, Cameron, back in the day, is that how they captured bears for Russian circuses?
I assume.
Guy right? goes out there, just beats the drags it off to a circus tent, makes it ride a little
whoa,
bike.
Whoa. Beating would be cruel. You just punch it once really hard.
Yeah,
my bad.
It's but called honestly, putting them on notice.
This is like one card. When I opened up my first box of cons, you know, I got a foil Savage Punch, and it's just sitting here. I'm really, really, really happy with it. It's so shiny.
I've got two more of those foils. I'll send them your way. You're almost to a playset.
Okay. That would be amazing.
All right. So last thing. Every week, it seems like this year, we would go into it going, okay, we're going to have a topic. We're going to have a topic-based show, but something news-wise would happen. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of wanted to boil this whole thing down into what was the biggest story of the year for you. So Cameron, let's hear about it.
So it hasn't really impacted me in like the long term since I've only been playing a year, but for me,
the butt cracks.
For me, it was the Wizards announcement for the new block format of what is actually going to happen. For me, this is huge. It could mean that we're going to have like these M15 moments where like a set will be printed. It won't be that hugely popular. And then come the next set, this one has stopped printing or whatever, and it's going to be, you know, darn near impossible to find a Stoke to Flames or a Goblin Rabble Master or whatever. To me, this is huge. Also, just for, like, the fact that, you know, there's not going to be block anymore as far as, like, you know, three sets. It's huge. This is huge.
I think that the quicker changes that are going to be happening in Standard is a big deal too. Not waiting for three sets per block, but you know, every two, and just the rotation happening quicker. You won't get as bored around the end of the season.
I mean, this has impacts on like everything that like the spike feed kind of represents. It has impacts on like the tournament side of things. I think it also has huge impacts on Dustin, the finance side of things. Like we're gonna, I don't know. I see this, you know, maybe being good for financiers or maybe bad in some cases. I don't know, but it's huge.
Cameron, you were coming dangerously close to writing a mission statement for us just there. Did you notice that?
The spike feed is, colon.
Dustin, what's your biggest story of the year?
So when they announced that they were doing the overnumbered cards for M15 and they were giving them away in these crappy little packs that you could get at your local hobby shop for free, all I could think of was dollar signs, man. Think about it, okay? So it's a limited run of cards that for some reason a lot of people didn't know about or hear about. Sure, it's all reprint stuff, but it's going to be worth money for people that want to finish sets. The sealed product of it is going to be worth money. It's crazy to me that they did it in the first place, but it's nice to know that they are doing something like that to where there is still some, I guess, mystique or intrigue with, you know, stuff coming out. It's not all just going to be a flood of reprints that everybody can get their hands on and all the cards end up being worthless, right? I think down the road, these things can be collectible, money, so on.
Dustin, I got to be honest with you. Gun to my head in a million years, I would not have guessed that's what you were going to say.
I agree, yeah.
There you go.
That, I don't even know what to say. I forgot that had even happened. So, wow.
Yo.
Wow, that is, you are the mind of a financial guy that you're thinking that far ahead. That's pretty crazy. For me, the biggest story by far was the cheating scandal with the Star City Games tournament. I watched those sleight of hand tricks in GIF form an obnoxious number of times trying to figure out what the heck was going on. But, you know, I think it's something that not only the cheating, but the community's response. What did he call? And like the guy who cheated, his way of responding to the people in that Facebook post where he called them like underground keyboard dojo specialist or something like that. It was like the most bizarre, like weird thing that has ever happened. So, I don't know. There was a lot of personal drama in it, but it was also an interesting kind of study in where we need to go as a community if we want more high level tournaments and, you know, big money and all these kinds of things on the line. And the fact that these guys are willing to do this on camera, right? Which is kind of nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Props to the dudes that are out there watching these Twitch streams so intently that they can pick them up. Like,
yeah,
super cool. So there's our year-end, you know, will we call them awards? Will we call them a list? What would we call them, Cameron?
Year-end review of Magic cards. Or Magic. I don't know.
Well, that's a spicy title. That is spicy, bro.
That's what you pay me for.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, it's so clear to me why you picked Merfolk as your first Magic deck.
Nice.
We have one card spoiled. No, two cards.
Two cards.
So, Dustin, why don't you lead us off with ye old elephant here?
All right, Sandstep Mastodon. He's 2 green and 5 colorless. He's got reach. He is a 5/5 elephant. When he enters the battlefield, you can bolster 5, which is choose a creature with the least toughness or tied with the least toughness among creatures you control and put 5/1/1 counters on it. So I see this thing being like, boom, EDH, that's it. Done.
I mean, I think I'll play him in limited.
Possibly, yeah. Mm. I mean, that makes sense. You can get to 7 lands unlimited. But
yeah, I don't think I'll live in a constructed world where this guy will be playable.
I'm hoping the bolster mechanic comes on creatures that are like 3 drops, you know, 4 drops, something like that, something good. We'll see.
Yeah, much like the Jeskai Elder when that was spoiled and we saw like what the prowess mechanic was.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and obviously it became something huge. The bolster does seem kind of interesting, especially with like a lot of these decks that are now running, you know, a ton of tokens, you know, 1/1 creatures or whatever, where if you could just pick one of those and give it a 5/5 or a 3/3 or whatever the bolster mechanic does, that could be huge.
Right.
I would say it does seem kind of like a, you know, the bolster mechanic seems kind of like a crappy non-bow with Sylvan Caryatid. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to end up with a lot of big Sylvan Caryatids, which you can't really do anything about.
That's true, yeah.
So, kind of weird.
Assuming that it only stays in green, you know, it could end up in other colors.
Right, right. So, I guess they probably all tie to one of the... What factions? What do we call them? One of the cons? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, Cameron, why don't you read us Valorous Stance?
Yeah, we got Valorous Stance. It costs one and a white. It's an instant and it has choose one. Target creature gains indestructible until end of turn, or destroy target creature with toughness 4 or greater. I mean, if you're running white in any of your decks, this is just like an obvious, like, I'm putting it in there right now. I see this being huge for like the blue-white heroic deck, if that's still a thing. The Jeskai Tokens deck, that could be good. I mean, any of those. I mean, I love the idea of this being in pretty much anything that's going to be running against Hero's Downfall. So, like, right. Yeah, I will be running it.
I really like the fact that it feels like they took two separate cards, made them one, and didn't up the casting cost. You know?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when they do the combination thing, they're like, they would add on an extra white or an extra colorless or something, but it's like, it's gravy where it's at, man. It's good.
Yeah, just to back up what Cameron said here, I think it's a very good card. I don't know that it'll fit in the tokens deck.
Sure.
I definitely think it'll end up in heroic because the versatility and, you know... Heroic is one of those decks that, you know, it can just fall apart to Apollo Kronos or any of the kind of like big beaters that just kind of get in the way, you know, especially if that you have multiple colors of beaters. But yeah, it seems sweet. It seems like Wrath Protection. It serves various functions in that deck, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I like this. I'm very excited to see what exists in other colors. Me being me, I'm really anxious to see the blue one, but, you know, hey.
Right.
We'll see what happens there. So, Cameron.
Yeah.
You ready to become a spike?
Oh, yeah.
So, every week, we put Cameron through the obstacle course that is our brains. Give him a magic card or a deck or a booster pack, and allow him to work through it using his newly obtained spike feed given skills. Cameron, we've given you a card this week. What card have we given you?
This week you gave me Overmaster, which is a cost one red, and it's a sorcery with the next instant or sorcery spell you play this turn can't be countered by spells or abilities, and then it has draw a card. So, you know, it's not horrible to be able to just cycle and to draw a card. That's a good thing. The next time you play an instant or sorcery spell, can't be countered. That's kind of huge. So if, let's say, I don't know what type of deck this would actually be in, but if you're trying to play any sort of creature, you could play this first and then play whatever creature it is, and then, you know, count, like if somebody's going to try to counter that creature, you could just force of will it or something like that. Yes, what? Dustin.
Creatures? What?
Well, if you're going to play a creature and then play force of will or something to then counter whatever they're going to play, they can't counter your force of will, which then will allow your creature into
that
play.
That is a horrible roundabout exclamation. So
three,
for anything
yes,
ever
yeah. I know, like, you're casting three things in order to do that one. Please answer my stupidity.
I would like to play against you with this deck and just topple you.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I'm a little upset that you didn't read the flavor text, which is an important element of Cameron Becomes a Spike.
I'm sorry. So trickery can't defeat raw power?
There's no question mark, but you made it sound like you're totally Ron Burgundy. Trickery can't defeat raw power?
So bad.
Anyway.
Cameron's just having a bad week with this section.
Yeah, we really are.
Right.
Yeah.
So Which, by the way, doesn't on the trading angle, like, do you ever see stuff from this era in trade binders? I almost never do.
Almost never. Almost never. It's a good thing that it's like a dollar. Because it doesn't matter if you can find it in trade books at that point, right?
But yeah, just that kind of early 2000s era just seems like nobody was playing. But
actually, I would fair to say that most anything that is old border is just not in trade books anymore.
Well, that's fair. Which is tragic, but what are you going to do?
Exactly.
Overmaster is almost entirely played in show and tell.
Okay.
You just do this before you cast show and tell. And that way that it can't be countered, right? That's it. Mm-hmm. The end. The draw card is kind of like a nice bonus. There are other ways to make your spells or your show and tell uncounterable. God, I can never remember the name. It's a Beseech You, that land that can make your sorceries and instants uncounterable. That works as well, but Overmaster kind of provides some value that way as well. So there it is. Overmaster, show and tell. They go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Okay.
So, Dustin, how's that Twitter account been going?
I got no idea. That would be Cameron's department.
Cameron, how's Dustin's Twitter account going?
I have no idea. but I assume just when I go to look and see how Dustin is doing, because I'm really rooting for his success with a Twitter account, seems to be doing pretty well. I mean, there's been lots of conversation just regarding how horrible of an individual Dustin is. So
see, that makes sense. That right there definitely makes sense. You know, that should be on there.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think maybe Dustin's next leveling you. Like, he's ended up on social media with no effort.
It's true.
So anyway, if someone would like to tweet at Dustin, though, hypothetically, what's his account?
Well, Dustin, do you want to know? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't even care because I'm not really doing this.
At MTG Dustin, or you can reach me at Cameron_McCoy.
I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is at SpikeFeedMTG. We also have our Patreon. We're calling it an alpha going right now. We're going to flip that over in January and start offering our kind of rewards and all that kind of stuff. So make sure you tune in next week to get the sweet, sweet deets on that. We will check you guys next week. Cameron.
Yeah.
You ready to become a spike?
Oh, yeah.
On the fly? Because I have no idea what card I'm giving you, just being honest. Cameron, I'm waiting for you to respond.
Sorry,
Are you ready?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Ready. I'm sorry. I was like, totally.
He's thinking about it. Give him time.
Yes, ready.